Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And my name is Jeff Jackson.
Hey, Jeff. Good afternoon. It's afternoon where I am. Is it still, it's morning where you are, right?
So it's another beautiful morning in Southern California for sure.
Well, we're having warm, balmy weather here in New Hampshire. It's 51 and raining and all the snow is melting. And I will probably have to get out what you probably have never heard of, but it's a roof rake. Okay, I got to rake the snow off my roof so that it doesn't come down all in one sheet, you know, kind of like a guillotine.
Oh, so, actually, you're correct. I have never heard of a roof rake.
They have those out here at Home Depot and Lowe's. So, So that's the weather report from the Northeast.
Well, thank you for that report, and it makes me glad that I'm here in Southern California where it's going to be 80 degrees again today.
Oh, my goodness. Happy January.
For sure.
Hey, Jeff, before we get into our main topic, I want to talk a little bit, or just, you know, kind of quiz you a little bit about the content that you curate on Facebook. I noticed that in addition to the posts that you write on our blog, on the Shepherd Staff blog, in addition to posting about these podcasts, you post a lot more other missionary content. Where do you find it, and why do you post stuff that's not really pointing to Shepherd Staff?
The reason I post any good content that I find is because I think the, you know, the cause that we're involved with involves the whole body of Christ. And so, you know, as a facilitating organization, Shepherd Staff, we facilitate God's glory being made known among the nations. If there's something good that's going to help somebody understand what missions is, explain to somebody that's never been a missionary what the missionary experience is like, open windows to people that sort of maybe have narrow parameters that they live within, you know, I want to get it out there. So, because I think the more we make known what God's doing around the nations, his love for the nations and how he's going about expressing that love, I think the more we do that, the more he's glorified. And I think the body works together, which, you know, we're not so good at the body working together, even for the ultimate cause of global missions.
Well, I love that big tent mentality. How much time do you spend looking for other content? How do you find it? You know, what would be a good way for a missionary to go about finding great resources?
I probably spend 4 or 5 hours a week reading missionary blogs and so forth. And a lot of times when you find individual missionary blogs and they'll reference something on another site and there'll be a link to it. And so I follow the link and I read through it. And if there's content there that I think is really helpful to explain the experience and so forth, then I usually subscribe to their feeds. And so I probably get a dozen or so feeds every time a blog site puts up a new blog. I get a copy of it and then I read through them and select the ones that I think are the most helpful. There's a couple of them that are sort of, I don't even know what the right term in the blogosphere is, but like they're sort of clearinghouses for a number of people that blog. So the one that you probably see me refer to most of the time is called A Life Overseas.
Yes, I have seen that one. There's a number of great authors on that blog.
Yeah, a number of great authors. And basically, I mean, what they do is they find individual missionaries or former missionaries that have their own individual blogs. And if they're good writers, then they get them to write for the A Life Overseas blog. And so that's probably the number one source that I find stuff in. And then there's a couple others that sort of compile information on other blogs, too. The one that I really like is paracletos.org, where Dave Lewis, every Friday, he comes out with, he calls it Casual Friday, and he just sort of lists missions-related articles that are on the net and blog posts that are on the net. I pick up a lot from him. There's one kind of geared specifically towards women called Velvet Ashes, and so I look at everything put out by Velvet Ashes because a high percentage of missionaries are women, either moms, you know, wives and moms, or single women missionaries. There's a new one that I just found called, that I really like the writer, Small Town Liowai. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. Laowai. But anyway, smalltownlaowai.com. So yeah, I'm constantly on the search for good blogs that are evangelical Christian based, and that explained the experience. And Actually, there's one that's really helpful too called Rocky Reentry, that the whole log is dealing with issues having to do with coming back to life in America, coming off the mission field. That's that big of a subject and that much stuff was written on it. So yeah, I enjoy doing it. I spend the time doing it. And, you know, I just sort of say, hey, if I read something that is intriguing to me, let's pass it on.
It just shows your servant's heart, shows that truly care about missionaries and those that are desiring to be missionaries, being educated. And also, I think it sends a lot of love out to those writers that are out there. I have read all of the blog posts that you link to. And I also love the little intro, you know, when you post it on Facebook and you say, you know, this is why I like it. Here's what to look for. Make sure you share it with somebody that's a missionary. All of that is just a great way to do social media and a great way to educate folks that are out there. And what we will do, you know, on the blog post that goes with this podcast is put a list of these websites that you just mentioned.
Great. That sounds good to me.
Excellent. So what else do you have on your mind? I saw a newsletter that went out to church leaders that are sending out missionaries through Shepherd Staff about on-field visits.
You know, actually, that's what's on my mind. This, you know, it's a new year, and you kind of, I always like at the beginning of a new year to think, what is this year going to look like for missionaries on the field? And with the craziness of what's going on around the world, and then when they're out there, they hear about the craziness that's going on back here. And there are a lot of crazy things going on, even since yesterday, with some of the stuff our president says. I don't know about this guy, man. But I think that, you know, I think that missionaries need on the field visits from their leaders, from their pastors. And, you know, my pastor set the model for me when I went out to the field. We went out and he came out to visit us twice just for a care visit. You know, he brought one of the elders of the church each time. He asked us what they could bring, and he came and visited us. And he said, you know, don't put together an agenda. I don't want to do anything except love on you and Helen and the kids. And it was just, in fact, my youngest daughter still has memories of at the time he was there visiting. One time was her birthday. And so in her little mind at the time, she thought the birthday present that we got her actually came from Pastor Pat in the church back in Escondido.
I was going to ask if you're talking about Pastor Pat. I love Pastor Pat. And that man truly, truly has a pastor's heart. I've actually been fortunate enough to sit with him as he's pastored to missionaries, as we've visited him and I to Eastern Europe on one trip. And he's the kind of guy I'd like to pattern my life after. He's so compassionate and has just such a heart to listen and minister to people, even when he is going through tremendous trials.
Exactly. So. And you know, so much of what Shepherd Staff is and why we do what we do was shaped and formed by Pat's love and our church's love that sent Helen and I to the field. So yeah, as this new year begins, I was just thinking, you know, I want to really just encourage pastors that have people out on the field to pay, you know, either the pastor themselves or one of their elder level, pastoral level leaders in their church to go and pay an on-field visit just for the purpose of caring for their missionaries.
And so, Jeff, let me just make sure I'm understanding what you're saying. You're saying the church should budget this. It shouldn't necessarily come out of the elders' pocket. It's something that the church should budget for in order to bless the missionary.
Is that what I'm hearing? Yeah, that's exactly what you're hearing. Is that missionary truly a member of your church family? Were they that when they went to the field? And do you still view them as that? And you should, because that the need to understand that and be loved on in that way is even greater over there than it is while they're here. And so, you know, missions and global missionary care, you know, is, I don't know, there's just, I think God honors that. I think God's paying attention to the care that missionaries receive from the leaders of their home churches. And they need to be, those that provide that need to be honored. And you know, Paul talks about that in 1 Corinthians 16, the idea of local churches honoring those that go and provide on-field care to missionaries and encouragement to missionaries.
I will say that, you know, in my former role as a missions pastor, there's two roles that I played one role was I would take short-term teams out to the field to work with a missionary. And then other times I would just go by myself to visit the missionary. Right. And there are two entirely different dynamics. Yes, it's not one that could be mixed together. I know that, you know, with the missionary themselves will be, it's so nice to just have you here. Because when you bring that team, you know, I love having the team. The community loves the team, but I have to be on the whole time. It's Amen. Work from sun up till sundown. Yes. But when you come just by yourself, man, I can be off. I can relax. I can hear from you. It is a night and day difference. And we need to make sure that as folks listen to that, that they understand that, you know, don't try and combine them. Don't try and kill two birds with one stone, because it is two way different experiences for your missionary.
Yes, it is. And although both of them show the missionary how important the missionary is and, you know, some level of value, when a missionary knows that his home church thinks highly enough of him to send somebody out, a leader or pastor, just to care for him and to love on him and his family and to step into their context, I mean, there's nothing that declares how important they are better than that. And a lot of times what churches will do is they'll try to combine that kind of thing with a short-term team. And again, you know, you've been there and done that. I've been there and done that. And like you said, you know, when you've been for months, you've been planning this trip and now the team's here and your mind is on, is the team functioning as it should? You know, who's getting sick? Who's not getting sick? Is the pace too much? Is it not enough? Blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, to say in the middle of that, hey, I have a pastor say in the middle, I want to get 4 or 5 hours with you to kind of just sit down and hear you. You can't concentrate. You're divided. And so, yeah, I mean, I think sending well, which is our theme, right? Shepherd staff, local churches sending well. This is a key piece of sending well.
Yeah. I will also say that I've been one of those guys that has pulled the lead guy away during the time of our trip, you know, and, a team trip. And what has happened is now that, he's going to come with me. He's not going to complain because, you know, because money comes from my church. Right. But that means now his wife has to go lead the team and take care of the kids and juggle a lot of things. And so, the trip has to be totally divided, you have to think that through as you're doing these on-field visits. They're two totally different animals.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So the terminology that I use is an on-field care-focused visit, not a short-term team trip.
That's a great name.
So
you're so exact about your terms.
I try to be. I'm that kind of personality.
I think that's good because I know you write them down. And, you know, as a writer, you stay on point with this is the thing I'm talking about. And when we're spending time in the field, we do need to be that goal oriented, that focused, and not try to cram too much into the trip.
Absolutely. And you know, the other angle on it is, I mean, certainly the missionary gets blessed by an on-field care-focused visit, but the one who goes, the pastor, if it's a senior pastor or an associate pastor or an elder or a key church leader that goes to do it, there's just nothing that deepens relationship better than stepping into somebody else's world, stepping into their context, just with the heart to love on them, to hear their story, you know, to listen to them and encourage them. And so what ends up happening is, you know, the bonds between those people grow incredibly deep. And that's helpful. It's meaningful to both of them. And then what ends up happening is sort of the byproduct is now when that person comes back and they're here back in the States talking to people in the church or relating about their story from the pulpit, I mean, they're speaking from at the heart level about people that they have a deep connection with now, a deeper connection than ever before.
You talked about, you know, when the missionary comes back and the bonds that are created from that trip, I do know that on the occasions that I've gone and done those on-field visits, when those missionaries have come back from the field, you know, that also greases the wheels for the re-entry conversation. There's a lot more credibility that you have to minister to those folks as they come back with their families and try and adjust to, you know, readjust to, you know, life back in America, because they hit so many rocky roads coming back. And that rapport that's built from those on-field visits continues to pay off dividends.
It does. And it's not like the person that did the on-field visit with them can totally relate to their experience, but they can relate in a sense better and more effectively than most other people in the church, because they've been there. They've seen what it's like. They've smelled the smells that they smell every day in the neighborhood. They've heard the bells going off. They've heard the mosque and the chants from the mosque, you know, five times a day, and the traffic and the smog. And now when this person comes back, when the missionary comes back, that person can relate to them a little bit, like, wow, you know, this really is shocking to come back into this after being in that for the length of time they've been there.
That and the stories, you know, the stories actually mean something.
Absolutely. So what we try to do, and I think what I encourage churches to do, and what I try to do in this, you know, newsletter that we send out to the churches we serve is to just get them to think and to pray about doing an on-field care focused visit alone, not as part of a short-term team, and then give them some parameters that would make the trip successful, that would make the on-field care focused visit be all that God, I think, wants it to be.
Okay, I'm looking through the text of this newsletter that you sent out, Jeff, and mm-hmm. Number one says your missionary is worth having, a church leader make the trip just to care for them, and I think you made that point very clearly. One of the other things you said is the length of the trip, how many days there should be. You said at least two, but not more than five.
Yes.
That's a pretty narrow window. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, it takes a good 2 days to really get the warp and woof of somebody's rhythm of life. But by your very presence, they're normal. As much as you don't want to interrupt their life, you want to step into the rhythm of their life. The reality of it is you are interrupting it by being there. So, you know, at least 2 days, but then you don't want to go too far. You don't want to stay too long. You know, after 4 or 5 days of their interrupted life, they need to keep going with what they were doing before you got there. And so in my own experience, having visits on the field, and then the ones I've done, because this is kind of what I do when I travel for Shepherd Staff, I do these kind of on-field care visits in addition to the ones the churches are doing, hopefully, with their missionaries. I've just learned that, you know, if you keep it between 2 and 5, it's going to be enough to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish, and then let the missionary keep going with their life. And then you've tasted of it enough to find out what it's really like for them. And you've gathered enough information to be able to really encourage them.
One of the other things you say is to ask for a local hotel. Don't tell them you're going to stay with them.
Yes.
It reminds me of a proverb. Proverbs 25:17 says, don't visit your neighbors too often or you will wear out your welcome.
Yes.
Is that principle somehow embedded in, you know, stay in a hotel, don't stay longer than 5 days?
Well, if possible, stay in a hotel and always offer. What I've just learned, and again, having been on the field and had people want to come out and visit, you know, the people that would say, hey, I want to come and just see how you're doing, step into your world and encourage you, you know, my first thought and my wife's first thought is, they're going to stay with us. We're going to have to clean the house. We got to rearrange everything. Where the kids, you know, which kid's bedroom are they going to sleep in? Blah, blah, blah. And so the idea is you communicate with them, look, I want to come, I want to visit you, I want to be the least amount of burden on you as possible. So is there a hotel that you can recommend that's nearby, easy for you to get to, or for me to get to you if I take public transportation, so that I can just hang out with you and spend some time with you and your wife and your kids and in the day-to-day pattern of your life? And what'll happen is, that gives them the out to say, oh, okay, well, check out this hotel or whatever. So if they don't have the room or they're not comfortable staying with them, you know, it's totally fine. But it gives them the opportunity to say, oh, no, don't stay in a hotel. Just come and stay with us. We love to have people come and stay with us. And I'd say 80% of the time when I've told people I want to come and visit, can you recommend a good hotel? 80% of the time they say, no, come and stay at our house. We love to have visitors come and stay in. And even if they have to move their kids out of a bedroom to give it to me, there's something about having somebody from the home church, a person of leadership, a person that's making a trip just to love on them. There's something about that that just really speaks to the family, and they're willing to be, you know, made uncomfortable or inconvenienced to do it.
Well, I will say that I've always loved staying at your house, but you guys have been empty nesters times that I've done that. So
right.
I don't know how you guys were, whether your house was chaotic with kids and everything or what.
Well, it was, but we hosted a lot of people in our house, even with when our kids were home. We just moved their bedrooms around and gave one of the kids rooms, for sure.
One of the other things that you have in your newsletter is there anything you can bring for them?
Right.
I can remember when I would go places, they're like, please bring peanut butter. We can't get that here.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you put that in there.
Yeah. And I always ask that, hey, are there anything, you know, is there anything you and your kids you long for snack wise or food wise that you can't get there that I can bring with you? Obviously, within reason, I got baggage allowances and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And usually, you know, usually a lot of times they'll just say, no, we're fine. Everything's good. So if they don't actually tell me what they want, then the thing that I've learned to take, and like everybody loves them one way or the other, is I take red vines. I go to Walmart and I buy packages of red vines, you know, the licorice.
Yeah, man.
I buy almonds. Just plain almonds, regular almonds from Walmart. You can all purchase them at Walmart. And then beef jerky. There's very few Americans living on the field that won't love one or all of those three things. And so if I'm visiting, you know, four missionaries, I have four bags of licorice, four bags of almonds, and four bags of, you know, and it's just a little snack, just a little taste of home can make all the difference for them.
That's cool. The final thing that you say in your newsletter here, Jeff, and I think it's probably the most important thing, is to be a listener and a learner. And I'm going to say that again, to be a listener and a learner. And don't try to relate to them by telling them stories from your travels. Don't try to, I guess what you're saying is, don't try and one-up them in their stories.
Yeah. Missionary success, one of the first principles, you know, that you got to try to help somebody that's going to the field to understand is, when you get there, it's called your entry posture. What is your entry posture when you step into this new place where you're going to live? And success is found in being a listener and a learner. Let your entry posture not be the big white American that knows everything and is in a role of leadership and dictates what's going on and nudges forward into, you know, great adventures and so forth. No, your posture needs to be a listener and a learner. And so when you visit missionaries, you know, the entry posture for success in encouraging a missionary is be a listener and a learner. Ask questions. Pay attention to what's going on around you. Look at the way they're living their lives. When you're a listener and a learner, the main thing is you don't feel the need to talk and to give your opinion about everything or to share your knowledge that would maybe bring insight to the situation, because you're not at all in that context. You haven't been in that context probably your whole life. So like, go in as a listener, a learner. And then, you know, this is true in the areas of grief or, you know, suffering or whatever. Don't try to relate to the person. You know, when you're kind of telling your story and the person who's listening to you says, oh, that reminds me of this, or that reminds me of that, you know, or I know exactly what you're talking about. No. That doesn't encourage. It disrupts, I think, honesty. It disrupts true compassion and empathy, you know, being expressed.
That's powerful advice. And if there wasn't one other very important thing to talk about in this podcast, then I would just leave it right there with you and, you know, say, hey, let's wrap it up there. But I think one of the final things that you talked about in this newsletter was the idea of a maintenance debrief. And I know that we want to do a full session on this, but maybe you could give us, you know, a teaser about what a missionary debrief is in light of being a listener and a learner.
At Shepherd Staff, you know, we did podcasts on this earlier, but we kind of categorize debriefing into two sections. There's a transitional debrief, which is somebody coming off the field to restart life in the States, and then what's called a maintenance debrief. The idea of a maintenance debrief is you're specifically doing a debrief for somebody that's on the field. They're going to continue serving on the field. So it can be done on the field. It can be done here while they're back on a furlough or a short visit even, because it's a 4 to 5 hour type process. But as part of this on-field care focused visit, a piece of it can be that intentional maintenance debrief rather than just sort of a generic drop in, see what's going on in your life, be a source of encouragement. Hey, I want a piece of my time with you to be this maintenance debrief. And basically what we're talking about is an intentional period of time where you're trying to meet these two goals. You're trying to help confirm the missionary in their calling. You want this maintenance debrief to confirm them that in their calling, that they're right where God wants them to be, doing what God wants them to do. And then secondly, the maintenance debrief, the purpose is to help them calibrate their lives. And because what happens is missionaries easily go out, get off kilter, and they get too busy, and they're neglecting their personal life or their family life. They're too involved in ministry, or vice versa. Their lives are not in harmony or in balance. And so a maintenance debrief has this goal of confirming them in their calling, and then also helping them to calibrate, get their life sort of back in balance or more balanced, so that, you know, they're going to be healthier and spiritually and emotionally healthy, and also be making maximum impact for the kingdom.
That's excellent. And I look forward to you unpacking that a little bit, because it sounds like you have a real process to talk through. And I know that our listeners will, you know, learn a lot from that and want to put it in practice.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I do. I've sort of mapped out the best way to do it. And so we can talk about that in the next podcast. The bottom line, I think, for this podcast is, look, if there's any church leaders listening to this, pastors or leaders, I just want to provoke you to think and pray about taking an on-field care-focused visit to your people serving out on the field this year. Put it into the budget, put it into your calendar. Contact the missionary, tell them the purpose of your trip, you know, some of the things we talked about, and do it, because I think it brings glory to God. I absolutely think that it glorifies God. It sends a great testimony to the nationals that this person's home church would send somebody over to minister to this person that they've come to know and love. When the missionary is encouraged, the nationals are going to get the benefit of an encouraged missionary. And the one who goes and does it is going to be changed. And then when they come back, they can give firsthand testimony to the incredible things that God's doing in and through these missionaries. And that encourages the body here.
That's great. And if anybody needs any help with that, they can email Shepherd staff.
Absolutely.
And you can jump on a phone call with them and walk them through, you know, what a schedule could look like.
Yes, for sure.
All right. Very, very cool. Well, Jeff, thanks for the time today. Excellent information. And God bless you. Until next time.
All right. Take care, Brian.
All right. Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.